Welcome back to American Billiard Radio. Today is Tuesday, June 1st, and we've got a slightly different episode this week. As part of the Cue It Up Network, we do semi-regular Facebook Live chats. Well, they're video chats, usually joined by different guests. We've had a number of different guests in the past. Carl Boyes is a regular, Kelly Fisher. This week, it was Nate, Rob Hovick, and Jim Telfer, and myself, although I wasn't really much of a part of it. But the four of us chatted about what was going on. Nate is off in Vegas this week. He's planning on snapping off the VNEA team event. So instead of Nate posting this as a regular Cue It Up podcast, I'm posting it as an American Billiard Radio podcast. So I'm not going to go in depth about what's going on in the industry right now. We kind of talked about that during the Facebook Live. So I'm going to just skip right to the Facebook Live that we did. So that will be my American Billiard Radio episode for this week. Here you go.
Live button.
All right. Did. I believe we are live.
He pushed it so well, Rob.
So now, is it morning or not? What time? And we're all in different places. In Wisconsin, Nate and you're in Nevada, Mike in Arizona. So here we go.
How it's 10:30 for Mike.
How's it doing?
Yeah.
I'm hanging out.
We're on the right time zone.
Yeah, I'm hanging out in a corner by myself in Vegas. So what would you rather be doing?
That's probably not easy to find.
A corner in Vegas?
I had to work real hard to find it, but I got it. There's a couple homeless people over here. I think they're sleeping, but...
And we don't hear video poker going in the background.
When'd you get there, Nate?
You do not. Well, got here on what day is today? Tuesday.
Today is
got here on Saturday. Days ago, Saturday.
Been in Vegas for 3 days. How much money you got left?
I haven't spent much.
You're not a gambler.
Well, no. I mean, the drinks out here, man. You can't get a drink. So the drinks are. If you go to the bar and just get a drink. It's I got a Captain of Coke the first day I got here, and it was $17.50 for a single.
You're at Bally's, correct?
Yeah. The price is
you're,
in Vegas right
walk
now.
Across the street from the fort at Bally's, and there's a bar there, and you can get a San Miguel beer for $1.
No. Well, you maybe can. Hey, Jim Telfer's there. Send him an invite, Mike. He can come in and talk with us. He's got nothing better to do with his life.
What time is it there for Jim?
He'd be 9 hours ahead of me, so 7 or something like that.
Oh, he's just getting warmed up.
Yeah, no, but yeah, Vegas, I mean, the prices in Vegas right now, especially for drinks, it's just absolutely bonkers. $17 for a single drink. They're trying to make up all that money from COVID overnight, apparently.
Yeah, Vegas... 20 years ago, started going the other way. It started going toward, let's just charge more for stuff. We don't care about how many people we get here, rather than let's get a bunch of people here and make good deals for them all. And I don't think it helped.
No, Gloria, it was a single pour. It's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, that drove me straight over to Walgreens right away. And I just grabbed a bottle of it. I grabbed an entire bottle of it, a gallon bottle of it for $40.
Yeah. I know at pool tournaments in Vegas over the years, every year it kind of went, okay, you can't carry anything in the pool room with you, right? From you buying it somewhere else besides inside the pool playing area. And then, of course, they stabbed.
You can now. Actually, yeah, the drinks in the pool room are actually pretty reasonably priced. The same drink at the bar in the casino is $17.50. The same drink in the pool room is $8.50.
Half price, nice.
Yeah, it's so maybe that's what you know.
Do they care about the pool players a little bit, you think, maybe?
Well, I don't know. I know they don't care about their gamblers, apparently.
Yeah.
So who knows? Well.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, let's start off here. As long as we're talking pool, I got a couple of shout-outs that I want to do.
Get them out of the way.
And when we started the podcast originally, it was a lot of local stuff. And so we featured some local players and things. And of course, we've gotten away from that with Nate going international now and being, you know, the star that he is with the show. And but anyhow, he is out at the VNEA International, basically amateur bar table pool championships in Las Vegas. And they had just got done with the Masters divisions there, which are very strong. And so I want to shout out to a few of the players high in the 9-ball and the 8-ball in the Masters division at this VNEA tournament. The shout-outs are going to go to first-place finishers T.J. Steinhaus, playing out of Minnesota, and Robbie Mattson, also finishing first place in the 9-ball. And those two gentlemen are on the team you're going to be playing, Nate, later on tonight. And a third-place finish in the 8-ball was another Minnesota player on that same team, Scotty Tollefson. So shout-out to Scotty. And then Robbie Mattson in the 8-ball not only won the 9-ball, but finished tied for 5th and 6th in the 8-ball. And here's a player who basically did not shoot pool for 10 years while his kids were growing up. And raised the kids, got back. Now he's getting back into pool, and he's quite a player and fun to watch. And 7th and 8th place in the 8-ball division was Jeremy Fedkenhauer from Wisconsin. Very good player, master player. He's won that out there, that VNEA Masters division before. And then 9th through 12th is Tim Tunjum from Minnesota. So in the top 12 places, you have got four players from Minnesota and one from Wisconsin in that Masters division. So real good showing from the upper Midwest here. And I just want to give those guys a good shout out. And a couple of ladies, Jolene Harum from the cities, Minnesota. She placed third in the 9-ball, and she's always in the top 10 of any of the ladies here in the upper Midwest in tournaments. And then in the 8-ball, a gal named Beth Fondell came in 5th and 6th in the ladies master division. So those are my shout outs.
There you have it. Damn, there's a ton of divisions out there.
Oh, there is. And there, I played in 2016 in this tournament, and the numbers are right now, and I'm sure COVID had something to do with this. They're like 30% of the entries in these different divisions. I think there was like 140 entries in the master division the one year I was out there. And this year there's 40-some. So I think, the pandemic has certainly made a dent in these larger amateur events that are taking place.
Yeah. Well, are you ready to start talking some pool?
Let's talk some pool, man.
All right, let's talk some pool. Well, the big event that in the last week, I guess, was the Buffalo's One Pocket. And who ends up, Tony ends up winning that against Scott Frost in the finals. So what do we think about that?
They had some great players. In that tournament.
There's a ton of money in it, too. Yeah. There's a ton of money.
Yeah.
I think he walked away with 60 grand, didn't he?
Something like that. I know the Calcutta had, the Calcutta had like 100 and, was it 100 and like $10,000 or something in it like that? The two open bids were Alex Pagulayan was number one and Dennis Arcoyo was number two. And I believe between the two of them, it was like $50,000 or something like that for the first two, Calcutta spots, and neither one of them cash.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
How many third spots did they pay in the Calcutta?
32 spots. Well, I guess they probably paid four, I guess. That would make sense if they paid four. And Justin Hall gets third place. Fourth place, did that go to Dennis? Dennis got fourth place? Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, maybe Dennis caught a little bit of that Calcutta action, but he wouldn't have, he's just hemorrhaging at that point because – I think he was the second open bid. I want to say he went for 25,000, 23,000, something like that. And he didn't make 23,000 back in the Calcutta. I know that. So,
yeah. I had a chance to talk to one of the local players the other day, Nick DeLeon, and he had a chance to watch Scott playing lately. And he says Scott's just playing outstanding.
Well, that seems to be the consensus. I mean, he seems to be pretty fired up. I know he's taken a little bit of heat as far as like the one pocket players. He's completely out of the discussion as to who's the best in the U.S. anymore, and maybe that's firing him up. You know, that's what Melina Mike and that's what Melina Mike said when we did the podcast together last week. He says that basically at this point that Scott completely just feels disrespected, and that's like his fire to get back going and playing again. So, you know, maybe it's not, I mean, it's never been a talent thing with Scott. So who knows? Maybe if he's actually playing, he's got the pool room under wraps and he's got that running smoothly, he can get back to playing some pool. And, you know, this tournament obviously shows that he can still play. I mean, he got all the way out to the A side finals.
Mike,
yeah, I mean, this would have been a good one to snap off. Oh yeah, multiple times. I have not been there since the renaming and the moving everything around that they've gone through. But yeah, I spent quite a bit of time there when it was Freezers.
Yeah, pretty nice place. That was
beautiful room.
I was impressed with the room. Yeah, and the one pocket table that they have up front there, kind of with all the seating around it, and the, you know, that was nice.
Yeah, and Stephen Hall says that it's 12 and a half and 13 and a half. That sounds right. So that's still a lot of money, you know. So,
and yeah, tennis, I mean, wouldn't have broke even.
No, certainly not. Well, if he got his half, I mean, who knows if he got his half? He's completely staked, I'm sure, anyways. But, So I guess at this point, what do you guys think? Were there any surprises? Were there any surprises you guys saw? What do you think?
Well, I think I'm very surprised by Alex's play. You know, you hear that name now, and it might not be there anymore. It just might not be.
I don't know if he's the best in the world at one pocket anymore. I mean, when was the last time he won a big matchup? I mean, granted, he strikes a lot of fear in people. He hasn't probably – I don't remember the last time he played a big one-pocket matchup. I don't know anybody that's dumb enough to play him at this point, but maybe they should. Maybe, I mean, is he unbeatable anymore in one-pocket? Is he on an island by himself? I don't know. I haven't seen him – he hasn't won a big one-pocket matchup. He hasn't won the U.S. Open. Maybe he went deep in the U.S. one-pocket last year, maybe. I think maybe 2 years ago, I guess. Maybe he lost in the finals or something like that. But – I mean, Alex is, I guess continue on, Rob, but I think that's a surprise to me too. It's every time these big events happen, he's never deep in them anymore.
Right. That's what I've last 2 years, it seems. He still has got the respect that he had when he was winning a lot, and he's not winning as much anymore.
Yeah. I mean, at some point in time, you got to be able to get it done, right?
Hey, oh,
who's that clown?
What's up, guys? Somebody was nice enough to send me an invite. You never send me any invites, Nate. It's good when somebody else is in charge.
Listen here, if I wanted to see something this ugly, I'd go out on the strip during the day.
Listen, man, I spoke to you yesterday and you were wearing that very same t-shirt. You must stink right now, surely, just hanging around Vegas wearing the same shirt for 48 hours. Wow.
Listen here, buddy. When you're sponsored, you can just send an email and they'll just send you more. I got a bunch of these.
you just don't wash them. You just ask for more.
Yeah, exactly. I got a pile of 40 of them at home in my corner.
Well, somebody's got to wear them, I suppose.
Look at you go. Mister, yeah. I got my first ever cue given to me and now I'm a big deal.
I was a big deal before that. How are you getting on? Are you winning matches over there? Have you played yet?
No, we start at 7 o'clock tonight.
Ooh, you nervous?
I'm always nervous. All I am is just one big bundle of nerves.
Yeah,
I don't really know what I'm doing, so that helps.
These types of tournaments, though, these team events and these amateur tournaments here in the United States, there are a lot of good bar box players in the United States.
Yeah.
Much more so than the big table players around the rest of the world. These guys are champions, amateur champions. He has to play the team where, like, they all finished first, second, or third in the singles.
Yeah, he's done well.
That's their first team they play tonight.
Good luck with that.
Here is something that does happen in these tournaments, is that if you go in and say, no, Nate's an upper 600 Fargo player, I guarantee you he's going to play more like a 720 than he is.
No, I'm a mid-800.
I guarantee you, Nate, I can you will, your internal competitive spirit will just go right off the charts in this kind of event, these big events like this. I've seen it. It's happened. I'll play decent pool, but go to these events and just play lights out. You're Shane Van Boning, buddy.
Or he'll dog it and blame his shoulder.
Yeah, or that.
Actually, I see out there in the comments, Chris Henry. I got to hang out with him. So thanks for coming and hanging out with me one day, Chris Henry. And I should also give another shout out to John Masico. I think just walked by a little bit ago and gave me a fist pump. It was awesome seeing you guys. You guys have been around the podcast for a long time, supporting us and, you know, hanging out with us and the streams and stuff. And it's really cool to put a face to the name. So thank you, everybody who's came over and said hi along the way. It's actually been kind of, I can walk through the room now and, you know, usually I'll get like a little nod or something like that. I feel almost probably what it's like to be Jim at the Moscone Cup.
Have you had to sign any autographs yet?
Oof.
Does my wife count?
No, that was the checkbook you signed.
Yeah.
Busted.
Check so you can buy some new shirts.
Yeah.
So where anyways, is it? What's the venue?
Bally's.
Bally's. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of a
pretty cool.
It's a super place to play. Where the way the tables are laid out in the two different rooms, they're just. It's great.
The casino's just kind of meh.
And they run the tournament really good too.
Yeah, the tournament. Yeah, there's nothing to complain about with the tournament. Everything's top and top in here. So the casino's just kind of meh.
Yeah. Okay, but it's not like it's the only casino in the area. You do have other options.
That's true. You got me there, didn't you? Yeah. So, anyways, okay, let's get back to this.
Talking about one pocket. So, are we done with that now?
Jim, wow,
you came on just when we were talking about one pocket. So,
yeah, you started. More specifically,
Alex Pegulayan.
I'm not a massive fan of one pocket, or should I say, I'm not very knowledgeable in one pocket. It's not something that's really played a lot over here in Europe.
Right.
I know it's Alex Laley's a massive fan, and he's been trying here in the Netherlands to get more people playing one pocket. I think there is a group in the north of the Netherlands, round about Den Haag, just south of Amsterdam area, and they're playing quite a lot of one pocket. But it's never really taken off here yet in Europe, so it's difficult for me. I did follow the results, and I tried to watch a little bit when I get the chance, but it's not a game that I'm well knowledged on, I'll have to admit.
Well, you are well knowledged on Alex Pegulayan. What's happened to his career?
His career?
Yeah. When was the last time that you saw him win anything big? Especially, I mean, he's known at this point for kind of not a specialty one pocket player because he's a world champion. But when was the last time Alex Pegulayan's won anything big?
Well, you know what it is? It's a little bit the same with Roger Federer at tennis. He won a load of stuff up until the depth of the tour. When Roger Federer was first winning tennis tournaments, his first three or four rounds were considered as buys every single tournament he played in because there just wasn't the depth there anymore. Now, in World Pool, when you're talking about the big major tournaments, the depth of the field and the quality goes all the way through the 128 players. So there is no easy matches. And you notice that the competition is getting stronger. And Alex is just, I think he's just, he's almost now sort of blended in with the very good players rather than the elite players. He's considered still an elite player, but I don't think he really performs to an elite level with those big guys. When you're talking about
what I consider what I call the top four, well, the top three games, the 8-ball, 9-ball, 10-ball. I don't think he competes with these top guys anymore. I don't think he can compete with them, which is why you talk about specialists. You know, you've got John Schmidt, who's a specialist 14-1. He can't compete with these guys unless it's 14-1. You got Scott Frost. He can't compete with these top guys unless it's one pocket. Tony, he can't compete with those big guys unless it's one pocket, you know? And I think more and more players are choosing one discipline where they think they can be successful in, rather than spreading it around throughout all the rest of the disciplines, which I can kind of understand. You know, they still have to make money. It's not like there's a huge amount of money that can be split around everybody. So I think certain players are starting to pick a discipline that they think that they can benefit from, that they have an edge in. And I think players like Alex Pagulayan, I don't think you're going to see him being successful 9-ball, 10-ball, 8-ball.
Do they run Calcuttas in Europe?
No.
They don't.
People have tried. It just doesn't happen over here. Nobody really puts the effort in to do it. And there's not as big a gambling culture here in Europe as there is in the States. You know, you could probably do it in the UK. You could probably do it, but the rest of Europe.
Yeah, these guys are walking off with a ton, you know, bushel baskets full of cash just because of the Calcuttas.
Because of the Calcutta, but that's right. But again, it's the same money getting taken out of one backer's pocket into another backer's pocket, or it's basically the same as the tournaments. It's just you're basically just doubling the tournament, you know, or trying to add on to the tournament. It's exactly the same situation. You know, we have the tournament. How do we get more money? Let's just get everybody to pay even more to be in the tournament.
Who have no chance. It's designed to give people that have no chance of making any money by playing in the
tournament.
The chance to still make some money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Nate.
Go ahead.
That the sport of whatever kind of billiard sport you're playing is on the rise? Because you talked about, Jim, about many more players being put in the mix, and they're all quality players. I think that's got something to do with the value of the sport on the rise, kind of gaining some ground as a real sport, not a pastime you do in the tavern down the block. You know what I'm saying? It's always been a real sport, I think, in Europe or internationally and in some Asian countries. So much in the United States, but more of a tavern sport. But now I think we're trying to, I can see it happening, that there's some coming together with the idea of pocket billiards and three cushion billiards being a quality sport, competitive sport.
Yes, to a certain extent. There's still obviously a lot more work that has to be done. It's very difficult to say. You know, I think with social media over the last, I mean, it's gone so quickly with social media. You're talking about in the last 15 years, what's been happening with Facebook and the fact that we're able to do these live videos and stuff like that. That has really helped, because you would never have had the opportunity to watch all these players or know who all these Asian players are. You maybe get to see one or two or three who were invited over to some of the big tournaments or that would come to the States and actually travel to play. Now, through all the social media, you're actually aware of exactly how many there are. I mean, there's a massive amount of players over there that you're now getting the opportunity to see. You know, and I'm even the amount of American players I'm aware of now, just basically through, you know, just the last couple of years being more involved on social media and the pool side. You begin to realize, I think the numbers have always been there. We just never really knew it, I think, you know? And I think the last couple of years, yes, we have made progress, but it's more that technology has helped us make that progress rather than the players themselves or the promoters. I think just technology has given us the opportunity to do it. But we still need to have the right people in place to make the most of the new situation to push it further than what is being done at the moment, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone's going silent. Nobody agrees with me.
I don't disagree with anything you said. I think there's until the sport can become quote unquote professional, we have to act like professionals, and that goes so far beyond like player conduct. It's the media. It's the marketing. It's the presentation. It's the events. It's the conduct. It's the apparel. I mean, it's everything. I mean, you don't. Anything that's a golf tournament, they all look the same, right? Whether you're playing the Masters, whether you're playing the U.S. Open, whether you're playing some crappy little tournament, the BMW Classic, everything looks the same. The players are properly addressed. The cameras do proper panning. You know, all of the golf tracer stuff's in place. Golf is professional from start to finish. Same with tennis.
Yeah, maybe an exception to that.
maybe
John Daly.
I think that's but the idea is like there's a lot of pool has no professionality to it at all, short of, you know, there's some people that are really good at media, but there's very few, and it's all different from you. I mean, even our podcast, from, you know, kind of podcast to podcast, it's a very different feel. You know, Matchroom's events are basically the same, but you can even see that they're really experimenting around quite a bit with the stuff that they do as well. There's other people. The only people that have consistency are the people that aren't innovating, and they're kind of just sitting back with a camera pointed at a table and saying, "All right, this is our product. Pay us $49.99 a month for it." Like, there's a lot of entities in there. What's going on, man? There's a lot this industry still has to do to grow, but I think we can leave that one there. I think Jim hit it pretty well there. So you guys want to move on to
standardization.
Yeah. The World Pool Championships. You ready, guys? You guys ready to touch on that?
Hey, before we get US.
Is Mike the only one that's breaking up here? Is that
you seem to be breaking up?
I broke up as well.
Well,
it seems to be back.
Okay, it's back.
Have you seen the list of players? Have you seen all the players? The list of players?
I haven't yet. But I've seen a couple of the players that are in there, and it's like I love giving some opportunity to some lesser players, especially if they're younger, like junior players. But there's a few players in there that I'm like, Jesus,
there's a player in there, and I know most of the names of players. If they can play pool in Europe, then I've heard of the name. And there was one name that came up, and I had never heard of the name before, and I thought, and it's a European player, and I thought, oh, okay. I'm going to have a look. And I went on to Fargo rate, and this player has a 534 Fargo. And he's getting one of the 128 spots for the World Pool Championship.
Well, let's put it this way. But, well, hold on. Yeah, hold on. So I think that's silly. That's absolutely silly. The person, whoever's drawing it, they're getting a bye. But I'm willing to give a pass because there are no China players. There are no Taiwan players. Because of COVID still, I mean, I'm sure the scramble to fill 128 person field was absolute crap, to say the least. I'm willing to give a pass, but it's silly to have a player like that in this field. But what can you do? I mean, you gotta get 128 people to London, I guess.
Well, listen, you've got the GB9 tour over there. So you've got a lot of players in the UK that are active and playing. And I can tell you now, you at the GB9, if you go in there, you go two and out if you've got a Fargo 600. 600 Fargo, you're going to go two and out there. And they get 104 players every single event. Now, I looked at the list of players, and I think six of the GB9 players will be there. Now, yes, you could argue, well, you don't want to be filling it up with too many British players.
You don't want to make it a Euro tour.
Which I agree with as well. But I'm all for giving everybody an opportunity, but
not at a world championship.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, how about this? If you're going to do something silly like that, why don't you invite Florian Kohler?
Yes.
And Florian Kohler is a better player than he is. Plus, he's got a million subscribers. Bring an actual crew to people to actually stream his match for him.
Yeah, or bring in a massive name out of the world of snooker or something like that. Something that can get publicity drummed up, you know?
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah, bring over Judd Trump or something. Snooker
players, a handful of them.
Neil Robertson.
Yeah, something like that.
Or shit, if you're going to go down to 5:30, invite Raleigh Williams. At least he has a following. Yeah. Somebody like that.
Yeah.
I
couldn't believe it when I saw it, and I thought, okay, yeah. But look, it is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, it just means that the round of 128, there's going to be some blowouts in it. But you would expect once they get themselves down to 32, then you have a proper world championships. Okay, there will be some of the Chinese will be missing, the Chinese Taipei, the Asian. But when you get round about to the 32, then you're going to be looking at pretty much what you would have, apart from the Asian side players, what you would expect to have, I think. It just means that there's going to be some blowouts in the last 128. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I got a question for you guys here, another one. My wife is a good sounding board for podcast stuff because she's never listened to one. And viewing pool matches on streams or on your TV set or whatever. And I asked her, I said, you're not a fan of pool. What would it take for you to sit down in the evening and watch a pool match between whoever? Doesn't really matter. What's the one thing you would look for that would kind of get you going? And you can take a guess at what
she said. With a gun to the head?
That wasn't it at all. But you and Jim are going to relate to this when I say this. She said the one thing that would get me to watch a pool match would be the commentating. That was her answer. Yeah. She said, the pool is the pool. People shoot balls in the pockets. She says, she comes to my pool league once in a while and brings a book.
Yeah.
She reads a book during the, she doesn't care. But if the commentating was exciting, sincere, enlightening, funny,
insulting,
you know, all that stuff, she actually said she'd probably watch.
Pickles.
So I think there are good. I think there are good commentators.
What do you think, Mike, about that?
I mean, yeah. At the end of the day, commentary is just about everything, I would say.
Sorry, you froze there. I didn't catch that.
No,
I mean, I think commentary is 80 to 90% of the game when it comes to streaming matches.
When it comes to television, yeah. Look, as pool fans and pool players. You know, me personally, I can put a match on and I can turn the sound off. I can be sitting on my telephone and somebody's playing and I can have the sound turned off and have some music on and or be watching television at the same time because I'm a player, you know. But as a pure fan or somebody who's just getting interested, then yes, you have to have the entertainment aspect of it as well. There needs good explanation. You have some commentators who are explaining as if they're talking to somebody who's been playing the game for 20 years. And they don't understand that some people just don't even know what English is, you know, and they start talking about stuff that you know, that the average Joe who's maybe just watching for the first time, they'll get bored listening to it and they won't understand it and they'll think, yeah, this is no point. I think, you have to be able to, you need commentators who can, I think that's why it's important to have two commentators at least. And they need to be able to play to all levels and all age groups. I think Neil's Fine is quite good with that. When he explains things,
Carl's good.
Then he explains quite well for every kind of level. Carl is very good at the excitement side of it. He can get quite emotional and get quite wound up, which is quite nice to hear as well. I think he's quite good.
That's what I like to see some emotion from the commentators, whether it's humor or excitement from the game, what's going on. Any kind of emotion that for me that would keep me viewing anyways. It would keep me from switching.
The same as having a crowd, you know. We don't. Yeah, It's kind of the same with the crowd. We don't have crowds at the moment. So if the Moscone Cup is on television, there is no indication, for somebody who doesn't really know pool, there is no indication of whether the shot is a good shot or not, you know, because you're not having the cheering and the shouting. You know, if you're watching pool for the first time and somebody plays a shot, if the whole crowd goes wild, then you automatically think that must have been a good shot because everyone's going crazy, you know. So that must have been really good. That must have been, you know, and then you start to get a little bit excited about it yourself. Now, we don't have any crowds at the moment, so it's up to the commentators to provide that. And I think Carl does do that. Carl's very good at the, whoa, wow, what a great shot. And he had to do and you need that. It needs to, you know. If there's no reaction to things happening, people just think, oh, well, that's just boring because, you know, that must just be easy because nobody's reacting to it, nobody's clapping, nobody's cheering. That's, yeah. So sometimes even overdo it a little bit for the new people watching, kind of overdo the excitement, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Me and Nate will do Moscone Cup one time.
Yeah, yeah, well, personally, I think
you and Nate do a great job together.
You
got the gloves on while you're commentating.
Yeah.
Or you're taking gloves off. Either way.
Completely. Bare knuckle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. That makes it fun. I think, you know, my wife, when she doesn't want to watch pool, it's not even fun for her.
Yeah.
There has to be that aspect of a good time in anything, or you're not going to want to do it. And so when she made that comment, I kind of sat back and I said, you know what? I'm going to talk to the guys on the next podcast to see what they think about that. You know, and certainly the crowd. Yeah. When things start getting back to normal and you start having the table surrounded by people and things. We did see that in some of the streams with the one pocket matches, that they were in venues where there were people watching, but they weren't. They were just sitting, you know,
yeah.
A handful of people sitting watching.
Yeah. So I guess let's talk more about the broad scope of it. Let's all give a couple players that we're looking to watch that we think might win. Mike, why don't you go first?
Oh, yeah. Put me on the spot here.
You got this, Scooter Butt.
Yeah. I mean, you know, filler's always going to be a danger. And I'm just scanning over the list. Chris Melling, you know, you'd be surprised if he were to win it, but not necessarily. Fedor, I mean, really, it's there's so many good players in this one. You know, a world championship is
well,
hard
it's a world
to pick
championship,
a
yeah.
Well, and Rob, it's true. You know, this field is deserving.
Yeah.
Is Mika coming?
Well, Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, Mika's there.
Mika's there. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna go with Kazakis and Mika.
That's a bold prediction. I like that.
I think Mika's hitting good. Mika. Come into kind of the, you know how players will kind of resurface, you know, for a couple years or a year or so in their during their professional careers, they'll be stars for 5 or 6 years and then that kind of fade away for 4 or 5 and then bang, all of a sudden for a year or so, here they come. I think Mika's one of those players.
Mika's hitting them pretty good, and he's there's no way he's going to be afraid of the stage.
Mr. Immelman.
Jim, what do you think?
Shane.
You're looking at Shane.
I think Shane wins it this year.
Cash, first ever world title.
I cannot envisage a scenario where Shane Van Boney is talked about as being the guy that never won a world title. I cannot envisage that scenario. He's got to win one at some stage. He's not going to be that guy who's won everything except a world title. He's going to win a world title at some stage. And I think he played well enough at the World Cup of Pool. He got a bit of confidence from the World Cup of Pool and he got back on the matchroom table again. I think Shane is very dangerous. And I think Shane. And especially if there's no, because the referees are not going to be on a table each, and I'm not sure who's racking the balls, but off on the outside table,
scorekeepers, the timekeepers.
Racking the balls. Okay, I just think when you don't have when you've got to read the rack, I just think Shane's just so good at that. I'll go for Shane, but there's 20 guys who've got a chance, but I'll go with Shane.
So if you have a dark horse, who's your dark horse?
My dark horse? It depends how dark you need to get for it to be a dark horse. I mean, would you consider Max Lechner to be a dark horse?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yep. I'll go with Max. Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's pretty good. I'll tell you what. I was looking at Alvin Ocean. I think Alvin Ocean's primed to have a really, really good event. You kind of talked me a little bit into Shane, though, man. That was pretty persuasive. I kind of like that. But I'm going to stick with Alvin. I think Alvin is hitting the balls real good. I know.
Normally, we would be the other way around. Normally, it would be you going for Shane and me going for Alvin.
Right?
Yeah. At least we've covered them both. At least we've covered them both.
Yeah, right?
You guys have switched personalities.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'm going to give three dark horses. I'm going to give three dark horses because that's what I do. My dark horses are going to be Dennis Grabe, Conrad Eustachian, and a player to watch out for. I think James Aranis is going to make – I think James is going to go deep. I think James – this might be the first time that James makes the semifinals of a really, really big tournament, and I think that this could be his launching pad into this next part of his career.
Yeah. The only thing that would worry me about going that dark is I genuinely believe that the it's in the Maxim Arena.
We didn't get that. You froze.
Oh, sorry. I don't. The thing that I have there is I don't envisage it being a player who has never played in the Maxim Arena before. I don't see it being a first-timer winning it. I think that experience is invaluable. Now that the World Championships is going to be under the matchroom lights on that matchroom table, I think that experience is going to be invaluable. So
I think that's true. Yeah. I think that's true except for the Filipinos, because the Filipinos are so diverse in what they play with. With all of the different things that the Filipinos have to play with, I mean, yes, this is definitely different, but they're so adaptive when it comes to their games with all the things that they can do in the industry. Yeah, all the different playing styles. I mean, there's bugs flying all over the place. There's cats jumping up on the table. There's roosters crowing in the background.
Okay, are there fans?
There's 50,000 people. Are there fans at this? Yeah, I think there are, right?
There will be fans there on the. Yes. It's from the 6th until the 10th, and there will be fans in on the 10th.
Only on the 10th. Okay.
Only on the 10th.
For the final day.
Well, yeah, so I think that's probably quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals probably on the last day.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Mike, now that we don't have you on the spot, what do you think?
I think Jim makes an interesting point. Is Shane going to be the type of player that's never won a world title? Does he need to win a world title?
I think his window is 2 more years.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's past his window.
Could be.
I mean, I think he's proven that he's still the top player in America, but not by a huge margin anymore. And of course, we'll probably say this, and he'll probably run undefeated through the event and not be touched. But I mean, is Shane missing anything if he doesn't win a world title?
Well, I'll ask you this then. I'll ask you this. Let's say he is going to win a world title. Is it going to be this year, or is it going to be in a year where all the Asian players can travel?
Fair. Right. He doesn't have to worry about Chang Yongwen or Wu Tianqing or the Koh brothers or.
Exactly. This is the year.
This is the year for Jim.
Provide him with the biggest opportunity to win one. Sorry, this looks like to me that like his biggest opportunity to win one. He looks like he's in good form. He's just played in a matchroom event, and let's be honest, it's the weakest field that the World Championship's going to see for the next coming years. With matchroom having it, this is going to be the weak year. And after this, it's going to get stronger and stronger and stronger.
You know, so Chris Henry here made a comment that I kind of like. He said after Shane's performance in the finals, in the last event, he said he's going to have a fire under him.
Yeah.
Of the way that went down, 9-0. I don't care who you are, that fires you up for the next time you get on a pool table.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
No. And I like.
I don't think that really affects Shane, to be honest. I think that might, if he gets drawn against Kazakis, then he'll maybe think, all right, pal, I'm gonna show you. But as far as the World Championships, it's a completely separate event for Shane. He's professional enough that he'll be preparing himself for another event. He'll have forgotten about the World Pool Masters now. He's already got two of them. He's already got two World Pool Masters. That one didn't really do him much pain, I don't think. I don't think that really hurt him very much. Getting donutted probably hurt him more than the fact that he didn't actually win the event. I mean, nobody likes to get beat to the zero.
Only time there's been a whitewash in Masters, in Masters history. The only time.
Yeah, nobody likes to have that record. But as far as losing, I think he goes to the World Championships. He turns up as the same old Shane. And he'll be the guy that nobody's going to want to play. None of them are going to, because he's playing. You know, he's playing, and he's played in the. He's had enough matches. He's had a good warm up for it. And you know, he's playing as good as anybody else. You know, Kazakis shut him out in that match, but he still was one of the stronger players in the tournament. You know, he looked like he was playing better than Federer. He looked like he was playing better than Alban. He looked like he was playing better than all these guys that we talk about as being possible winners. But it's wide open. You know, probably be somebody that we haven't even spoke about yet. That wins it.
Yeah, nobody said Ekpante Kachi's. Nobody said Kachi's name.
Nobody said Jason Shaw's name.
Nobody said Jason Shaw.
I like David Al-Kaidi. For a dark horse.
David Al-Kaidi.
I like him for a dark horse.
Francisco Sanchez Ruiz. We've barely said Fedor's name, and he's the defending champion.
Yeah, why not?
I mean,
why
nobody's picking him. I think the shot clock. I mean, Fedor's a little bit slower of a player by nature, and I think the shot clock speeds him up. But I think that, you know, when you're playing against this level of competition, and you're just a tiny, tiny bit out of your element. I mean, Fedor's played in, what, three matchroom events ever now? Two Masters and then the Moscone Cup. And we haven't seen him really hit a gear that would say, you know, this guy's comfortable. In the Moscone Cup, he played pretty okay, but I would say he was not his best game. Right? Bye, Jim.
Yeah, kind of broke up.
Oh, well, I don't know what happened there?
I don't know. You froze up now.
Well, did you see what I was able?
You're frozen in time now, buddy. There you go.
You guys can't hear me?
All right, we're back. Whose fault was that?
You guys can hear me then, or are you good?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess with what I was saying with Fedor is Fedor's played in three matchroom events now. I think three matchroom events now, not counting the U.S. Open, of course. And I mean, he hasn't played his game yet. So I think that shot clock, I think that affects him a little bit. I think he's a natural slower player. He likes to, you know, really take his time and get into his pre-shot routine with it. And, you know, maybe he's not quite used to that shot clock. And then maybe, you know, he'll come out and he'll be just fine. Who knows? But I think until Fedor wins a matchroom event or at least makes a deep run in one, like a real deep run in one, and maybe makes it to a finals, I think I got to see it before.
Yeah.
But I'm rooting for him. I really like Fedor, and I think it's his 21st birthday party today. I think he turns 21 today.
Yeah, something like that. Today or yesterday.
Happy birthday to Fedor.
It's amazing, isn't it? Just 21 years old.
Wow.
Silly. It's insane.
That is insane.
Yeah. So I guess what do you guys think? Is that that wrap up our discussion pretty well? Anybody else have anything to say?
go and win yourself some. What is it you're playing for there? The BCA World Championships.
VNEA.
The VNEA.
VNEA.
VNEA. Yeah, that's international. Yes, there's players from. They'll have teams from. When I was there in 2016, they had teams from. In fact, a team from Germany won the team division that year.
Okay.
So there's teams from Australia that come, Germany,
New Zealand, Canada,
Egypt. Played a couple Bahamas. Guys from Egypt there once.
Spain, go kick some Portugal. Butt, mate. Come on, cat daddy.
We're playing for $8,000 first prize. So we're basically Ooh. Playing for the equivalent of 3 Vegas drinks.
Yeah. Three rum cocktails.
$8,000. For a live podcast, Nate, want to come sit in?
Fortunately for Nate, one rum cocktail is enough for him for one night.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Who do we have here?
You guys.
Hey, Chad.
Yeah, we got Mike Howerton. Okay. Mike Howerton, Rob Hovick, Jim Telfer.
Chad.
Live Facebook right now.
What's going on, guys? How are you?
Mr. Havoc, how are you?
Hey.
Mr. Havoc.
Just hanging in.
I woke up today.
That's my goal.
How does that $10 coffee look taste?
Oh, it was $18
coffee. Jeez, oh.
Yeah. How the price is here, buddy?
Yeah.
You bought a drink yet?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I bought a drink and then I made all my friends buy the rest of them because it was just a little bit
of money. Yeah. We're playing in the Masters division for that. I just said we're playing in the Masters division for $8,000. It's the equivalent to 3 Vegas drinks.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. I played the Masters a couple of times. And some friends asked me to come play in the intermediate. I was like, I don't know if you want me to.
I'm a promoter now. I can't play anymore.
That's the easiest way to play pool is to start promoting the game.
Cheers.
So how you been, Jim?
Yeah, pretty good. I hurt my neck, but I'm starting to be able to play again. So I played a little bit today. I haven't played much for the last 2.5-3 weeks, but no, I'm doing all right. I'm just enjoying the nice weather when I'm allowed outside, when there's no lockdown. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I'm a bit jealous that you guys are getting to play in tournaments and you're cuddling each other. Yeah. Oh God, I need to come to Vegas.
I know when I got out of the house here about a month ago for the first time in a year and a half to go play in a tournament, I was just so happy just to be there, just to put the stick together. And I didn't care what happened. And I played great because it was so exciting just to be around other players and bumping shoulders again with people.
I would just like to go and talk to people about pool, you know, I just sit in the same room as them and just hit some balls and watch. I haven't potted a ball on a table other than my own table for more than a year now.
Yeah.
Only played on my own table for, I can't imagine how it would have been like if I didn't have a table at home. I feel quite blessed right now. Yeah, I mean, I feel quite blessed and fortunate that I've got a table at home because I know a lot of players are even just as passionate about the game as I am, and they don't have the opportunity to play anywhere. Crazy. Yeah.
Oh, I do have one bit of news. A three-question tournament that was always a world event was the Hovind Open. It was played at the Carrom Cafe in Queens, New York. And that tournament now, after the pandemic, from the latest I heard, is going to be held in Vegas, not in New York. So the three-question international world event in three-question will be in Vegas next year, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, we've got quite a few really good players in this part of the world. Belgium and Netherlands.
Some of them in New York.
Some real good players. Yeah.
From Holland, yes, and Denmark. Yeah. I met a handful of. They enjoy their ale.
They like it. Well, they like a little shandy. They like. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that. Yeah, and they're excellent players. So all of them.
Yeah, very good. It's a very skillful game. I love watching it. It's very skillful. I can't play it very well, but I really enjoy watching the real good players playing it.
When my pocket skills started to wane, I was about 65, 66 in there. And I thought, well, I'm never going to get any better at this. Okay. This is as good as I'm ever going to be. Mm. And maybe that was 20 years ago. So I thought, well, let's try a new game. Let's try three cushion billiards and see what happens. And I realized that I was a low level player. And hey, guess what? There's room for improvement at any age in three cushion billiards.
Yeah.
Whenever you take it up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very popular game over here. Yeah.
Sorry, Ray, are you really back with us?
I think I'm back. I got kicked off the. I was on the Wi-Fi here. And it said you're using too much bandwidth. You are. You can no longer use the internet. So I got kicked off the internet for using too much bandwidth.
Oh.
So I switched over to LTE. It took a while.
Just buy some more. It only costs you about $500 for 5 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
Half as much. Yeah. Hey, it's only half as much as a drink here, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's cheaper than drinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, I'm gonna have to jump out, guys.
Okay, boys.
Unexpected, but fun.
Yeah, I think we're wrapping up anyways.
I gotta go put my daughter to bed and give her a kiss. So thanks very much for inviting me. Enjoyed it. Nate.
Yep.
Do it for the cats. Come on, cat daddy, go win some money. You got this, buddy. And put another shirt on. That one must stink by now. you smell like a cat daddy.
Yeah, well, you smell like you're rude.
You cat daddy.
All right, everybody, let's get this wrapped up.
I got right, guys. Balls. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.
Good job, everybody.
Take care. Yep.
Take care. Thanks, everybody, for watching. See you.
Okay, that was Nate, Rob, Jim, and you could hear just every once in a while myself. I will have another show this week. I have an interview in the can, and I need to put that out. That'll be later in the week, but you can look for that later in the week. That is regarding the English 8-ball scene that's going on and Ultimate Pool Group and what they've got going on out there. But again, that'll be later this week. I appreciate everybody listening. That was American Billiard Radio for June 1st. And Dave, we are always thinking about you.